Well, I don't know how special this is going to be. A little different than your average Sankirtan marathon class. I think it will certainly be relevant to book distribution and Srila Prabhupada's books, and we'll go until 9 o'clock, and then you'll have prasadam. And I go to the doctor, but he's already got all the books. I didn't produce this, so I'm not fully responsible for its title. Let me just put this on, which is called The Fading Acharya. It is one of the presentations that we sort of mull over in what's called the organizational development team, which is a branch or servant of the GBC body, and it functions for the purpose of organizing our society. I know that sounds like some people like a very unpleasant thing to do, to become really organized and systematic, but by the assistance of some other very organized Vaishnavas, professional devotees, this has been actually taking place for the last 10 years. So, that's the title. But before that, then I'm going to offer my obeisances to the founder, Acharya, Hare Krishna. Om Gyan Atimiram Dasya, Gyan Anjana Shalakaya, Chakshurun Militam Dina Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhunitananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shiva Shari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It is 2017. I'm just calculating back. Of course, we've been here in the UK coming on to 15 years. 1969 is when ISKCON was incorporated. And devotees especially have been active in book distribution since the late 70s, after Srila Prabhupada's actually even during Srila Prabhupada's disappearance, and then thereafter. You're all familiar with the importance and the real reason. If you want to actually get some air and open that window, it's fine. This one was just a little too drafty for me. You're all familiar with Srila Prabhupada's desire that we make the basis of the Krishna consciousness movement, as well as its missionary activity, the distribution of transcendental literature. Why? Well, because anything, whether it be a religion or some type of educational system, a political system, whether you have a Mein Kampf or a Das Kapital, it has to have a foundational statement or statements. It has to have a constitution. But over and above that, it needs to express its knowledge in a very substantial literary form. And of course, that's what the Vedas are. Krishna consciousness is based on not only just the Vedas, but the essence of the Vedic literature, which is Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, and in pursuance of them, Nectar Devotion at Chaitanya Charitamrita. And, of course, distributing Srila Prabhupada's books both has purpose, or has many purposes. One of them is to disseminate our mission. But of course, disseminating mission is based upon the fact that people are actually reading the books. And by reading the books, their lives are going to change. And the books are not just meant for being sold, they're also meant to be read and studied by the distributors. And I'm going to make this presentation, which we generally call the four generations presentation as to the important role that studying Srila Prabhupada's books has in actually making our mission successful. So, I don't want to make this a heretical statement, but selling the books is not going to be enough to establish the Krishna consciousness movement. You got to live by them. You got to know them. You got to educate people by them. And the books say things, and we have to actually do also what they say. And so that's why I thought that we could go a little further. And if I have time, then I'm going to also speak about a subsequent topic connected with book distribution as to how devotees could increase book distribution in a way that's not a secret, but it's something that personally, either as a book distributor, but especially as a Sankirtan leader, temple president, GBC, I've been sort of contemplating and encouraging for many years, but it's really yet to happen in a very substantial way. And Atok Sujit Krishna is here, Prabhupada Charan is here, and I'll mention one devotee in Hungary who, as individuals, very expert in actually getting into this other field of book distribution, which would really require a qualitative development in order to make it successful. But I'll come back to that later. Everyone can read relatively well, even those on in the wings over there. Okay. Don't mind if I come out here. I need to read it also. So, this is also called The Dangers of the Four Generations. Let me just continue on. What are the four generations? First generation is Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada came to us 51 years ago. Now it's 52. 51 years ago, he established the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. And he made devotees. They were the second generation. So if we talk about ISKCON, Prabhupada was the sole member of the first generation. But Srila Prabhupada had many disciples. Often we use the number 5,000. Srila Prabhupada had 5,000 disciples. And, of course, time moves on. Krishna says, Sakalini Hamahata. And now we see that not only Prabhupada's disciples, but Prabhupada's disciples have their disciples. They are the third generation. And Prabhupada's disciples' disciples, they also have their disciples. Now, obviously, we could go on like this. There could be a lot of pictures about many subsequent generations. But we're going to study these four, because more or less they all exist. So, of course, Srila Prabhupada is there, Srila Prabhupada's disciples are there, and they're gradually marching on to join Srila Prabhupada, leaving this world bit by bit, one by one, or more like 10 by 10. And then there's a next generation. Now, I could make a chronological distinction here, or a hierarchical one by initiation. Let me use the chronology. I'll say that, for instance, Shruti Dharma is a third generation. And Shruti Dharma is how old? 58. So, and then we've got, how old are you? 21. He's fourth generation. And technically speaking, a generation is 20 years. So he may not be Shruti's disciple by initiation, but age-wise we see that we've already got them. And of course we've got another dimension to it. We also have the children of our devotees. So we have our devotees. We have also their children, And we also have the children's children. So we've got at least four, and actually if you push it, we could even have five generations current at the present time who are members of the Krishna consciousness movement. So fourth chapter, Krishna says, evam parampara praptam imam raja shayo vidu. So in this parampara, and Krishna is speaking about the parampara of saintly kings, then the knowledge, transcendental knowledge comes down. That transcendental knowledge is both the dissemination of the mission as well as the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita and the understanding of Bhagavad Gita and our texts. But sakali neha mahata. But time has a very powerful influence. And we want to examine a little what we really need to do as devotees in order to ensure that the mission of Krishna consciousness, which Srila Prabhupada established, continues for dozens, hundreds, we're talking about 10,000 years. And the key is in the books. But it's not just in distributing the books. All right, look at this graph over here. You see there are four phenomena. I'm going to end up being a little in front of you so I can see too. And these four are in here. You see the generations, and here you see, at least, of course, you could analyze this in different ways, but this is one way of approaching it, that when Srila Prabhupada came and he established the Krishna consciousness movement, he presented teachings, which were his instructions, and he dealt with many issues which generally tend to be divisive or come up in a society in a particular context, and he had a particular purpose. So generally when we talk about spreading a movement, spreading a religious movement, then all of these things need to be very clear. You have to be very clear about what the intention is. The Srila Prabhupada was very clear about what it was that he wanted. Of course, the context of Srila Prabhupada's instructions was a very relevant issue, because Prabhupada made very contradictory statements. He said one thing to one person and said just the opposite thing to another person. His intention remained always the same. But the context meant that sometimes the instructions were different. To some devotees, he would say, you should stay in Vrindavan and never leave and just preach here. And to other devotees, he would tell them, all right, you just don't bother staying here. This is spiritual sense gratification. You just go and preach and travel all over the world. Prabhupada's intention was to establish the Krishna consciousness movement. But sometimes, in terms of, well, should you stay in Vrindavan or should you not stay in Vrindavan? For some people, they should stay in Vrindavan, and for others, they shouldn't. Prabhupada was very clear, no doubt in Prabhupada's mind, what he wanted. But the second generation weren't always necessarily very clear on what Prabhupada's intention was. And often, they would get, in the absence of this intention, then they may have had a context, because intention means what's in Prabhupada's heart. It's a very subjective thing. What is Srila Prabhupada thinking? So he knows, and unless he specifically tells you and you're there to hear it, it's not necessarily black and white. It's not clear. You've heard the instruction on a particular topic, whatever that topic may be. So something here is missing. And of course, we'll see that. And because something's missing, then there's a potential for not actually realizing what it is that Srila Prabhupada wants. But that's just the first generation, and they were with Srila Prabhupada. So if historically you go back, you read Prabhupada Lilamrita and other biographies, you see that in Srila Prabhupada's time, it wasn't like a bed of roses. A lot of issues came up in this movement, even though Prabhupada was physically present. But Prabhupada wasn't physically present besides every devotee to guide them. Prabhupada was in one place in the world, and different devotees had different takes on what it was that these instructions meant according to time and place, because they had a different take on what Prabhupada's intention was. Then there comes the next generation. Now the next generation no longer has Srila Prabhupada's personal association, and they're not necessarily very clear on what the context is either, because they're not there. They're not there to hear what it was that Srila Prabhupada said. So there are topics or issues. There is also Srila Prabhupada's instructions on them. Well, the instructions are available, and we'll see that. And then comes the fourth generation, who actually don't necessarily even have connection with the issues, but with the instruction, but they get left with, all right, we've got to spread Krishna consciousness, and all the many things that come up to enable the spreading of Krishna consciousness movement, as well as the different obstacles. We're just going to sort of move on from these. So you can see that as time goes on, Krishna says, Sakalini Hamahata, then different aspects of Srila Prabhupada's Vani and Vapu start falling out of the picture. Krishna says, Sakalini Hamahata Yoga Nasta. This is the influence of time. You're in the material world. So even spiritual things, even transcendental things, unless they're maintained by transcendentalists or serious devotees, then they also fall out of the picture. Okay, intention. What does intention mean? Well, it's someone has a particular will, he has a desire, and he's very clear about his aims. And he also has a particular mood. These all contribute to what someone's intention is. So, aims, he has a mood, and he has a particular purpose. What is he actually trying to achieve? These are known to him. Srila Prabhupada knew what he was going to do. So when he met that conductor in New York, he said, yes, there are temples, there are books, there are devotees, only time is separating. So this concept of Trikalagya, Krishna sees through past, present, and future. And so he says, past, present, and future. What's the verse? Bhagavad Gita. Bhavishyani cha bhutani. So, time is not an issue. Similarly, for Srila Prabhupada, time was not an issue. He was very clear what it is that he was doing, and everything that he did, everything that he said, was to actually fulfill his intention. And yet, according to time, place, and circumstance, there's such a thing as context. And the people who are involved, according to different places, sometimes in order to achieve his purpose, in order to fulfill his intention, Srila Prabhupada would say different things. Some devotee wrote to him, Prabhupada, I want to take another wife. The Prabhupada replied, okay. But in the meantime, everywhere Srila Prabhupada said, no divorce. Time, place, and circumstance. When the devotee says, well, why? Because he's going to do it anyway. So if I don't say okay, he's going to do it, and it'll just compound his offense. He's already making one offense by getting married a second time. Now, if I tell him no, he's going to compound that offense by ignoring the instruction of his spiritual master. So you see that this intention and context, the result of this is that different devotees will see things in a different way. To them, they may appear contradictory. So there's all these unlimited questions. Well, What about these apparently contradictory statements? It's a phrase that we use, apparently contradictory statements of scripture, of Srila Prabhupada. He said this, he said that. So when intention is not there and context is missing, then we run into all of these naturally. You run into these problems. It's like you saw before, that all of these things actually make up a jigsaw puzzle. So you don't have all the pieces to the jigsaw puzzle, you don't see the whole picture. And here, so the idea is that yes, somehow or another, even though the pieces start to come out, we need to do something in order to actually compensate for them. And we'll come to that. You have the instructions of Srila Prabhupada. And this is generally sort of a hierarchy that we accept in terms of the strength of those instructions. But they're all valid according to time and place, according to context. Srila Prabhupada's books and Srila Prabhupada's lectures. When what Prabhupada is writing in his books, that is inviolable truth. And that applies to, well, it applies to everybody. However, Prabhupada said things, for instance, in conversations, and Srila Prabhupada himself said that, well, you can say any damn thing, but you better think 100 times before you write it down. Similarly, in Prabhupada's lectures, they were very public things. So Srila Prabhupada was speaking to the public. Prabhupada was very guarded as to what was going on. But when it was conversations, and if you listen to Srila Prabhupada's conversations, it's a whole different world. Srila Prabhupada is speaking to individuals about particular topics. And Prabhupada says very extraordinary things. He says very revolutionary things. Anyway, he says a lot of things. You have to see. And then there's Srila Prabhupada's letters, which they're available, and there's certainly Prabhupada's instructions. How relevant they are is highly questionable. It's a good example of context. You don't know what the person wrote because you don't have the letters. And Prabhupada's replying to one person. Now, in some of those letters, Prabhupada says, "This is my instruction to you all." And that becomes very clear. But when Prabhupada is just talking to one person in a very personal way, in a correspondence, it's not on the same level as when Srila Prabhupada is talking in the books. And then, of course, Prabhupada had personal instructions that he gave to certain devotees. And the real context and the strength of that instruction is known to Srila Prabhupada and that devotee, maybe, and maybe to some other devotees who were there. And then, etc. Well, I don't know what that means, but if you know of any other form of instruction. So these are Srila Prabhupada's instructions, but they're all relevant. Even if, for instance, one of these will override something that's here. Why? Because Prabhupada said them. And Prabhupada knew why he said them, because Prabhupada had an intention. But in the absence of being in Srila Prabhupada's heart, and we chant that, Riddhi Jnana, Riddhi Deepa Prakashita. So unless our heart is one with heart of Srila Prabhupada, it becomes very, very hard to actually know what Prabhupada's intention is. And parts of the puzzle become then very difficult to fill. And then there are issues. We raised the question of issues, and that was the first thing, because it's issues or which become obstacles in the spreading of the Krishna consciousness movement. And those issues may be divorces or women Diksha Guru, relationship between GBCs and national councils. It may be how we preach, how we dress, spread Krishna consciousness in China. So there are so many questions that come up. This word issue may not necessarily be the best one. But ultimately, this movement and spreading Krishna consciousness comes from different activities and different goals that we also want to achieve. But material world, Kali Yuga, there's going to be so many obstacles to realizing them. Okay, so in the second generation, we see that they're missing the intention. I'm just trying to keep an eye on the time, so maybe I'm... Is this all digestible? Am I not going too fast? It's not that complicated. So the intention is not there. So how do you reconstruct that instruction? Well, you have to be very clear about what Srila Prabhupada's instruction is on a certain topic and what was the context. And of course, you have one very additional blessing, is you can go to Prabhupada. And unfortunately, that's not something that we're doing anymore. But the result of that is that you have devotees who have a different approach. What was Prabhupada's intention? What does Srila Prabhupada really want? For instance, in 1975-76, there was the Radha Damodar traveling Sankirtan party. They were extremely successful. They had 120 brahmacharis traveling around the United States. They were the biggest book distributors. However, they were going to the temples and telling the brahmacharis in the temples that grihasthas and women are all maya. You should all just leave the temples and join the traveling Sankirtan party. In fact, they even had a plan at that time, or at least some of the leaders of that program had a plan, where they were going to ship all the women in ISKCON to Australia. So, ultimately, Srila Prabhupada had to bring an end to that, and he had to explain, well, no, this wasn't actually my intention. And this isn't how I was planning to spread Krishna consciousness. And the temples can't collapse at the cost of book distribution. The brahmacharis who left the temples should go back to the temples. The ladies shouldn't go to Australia. But then even later on, Prabhupada said, yes, actually, this should be the right preaching of sannyasis to brahmacharis. Don't get married. Different instructions. The intention was the same, but at the same time, don't make chaos. So you have to know how to balance different types of instructions. So therefore, the big argument. That was a real crisis within the society. And some people then really feel, and especially the temple presidents who were mostly grihasthas, they were like really stymied. Here were these sannyasis, they were really performing, and they were also very close to Prabhupada, so they had easy access to Prabhupada. Anyway, Prabhupada, as usual, resolved that situation. The third generation misses context and intention. So there's already two things which are missing. And that becomes, now, this table has one leg. Just imagine if it has four legs. So if you've got a table with two legs missing, so either it collapses or you actually have to do something in order to support it. So how do you support that? You need memories. You need guidance of both the context, especially from Prabhupada's disciples. And you get that. We see how, and I think devotees have that experience when you have, for instance, Prabhupada's disciples, and you have these particular programs where they talk about Srila Prabhupada and their experiences with Prabhupada. So devotees then feel very, very enlivened, and they feel a special type of connection, isn't it? So you really feel like I'm connecting with Prabhupada, and you feel like I'm knowing Srila Prabhupada. Why? Because you get to know Srila Prabhupada's intention, and then you start to see things that you may have read about in a different context. You see it in the context of the people who are actually right there. But this is also limited, you could say short-lived, because Prabhupada's disciples also only there for so long, and many of the disciples had very limited association. Devotees who came to Krishna consciousness movement after early 70s, it became very difficult to connect with Srila Prabhupada. Now the fourth generation, you're missing three out of four legs of a table. So you really have to compensate. And what's the compensation? You have to reconstruct those others by very systematic education. So you have to study. You have to study what is the context? What is the instruction? What are the issues? What is the actual intent? All of these things you have to apply intelligence. Otherwise, just going full steam ahead without close connection to Srila Prabhupada. And Srila Prabhupada said, if you want to know me, then do what? Yeah. Unless you actually do that, because that's what we've got. That we've got. And of course, we have his lectures, and we have these. And so these become subject matter for education. Now I'm going to just diverge a little, and this is a part of another presentation. It's something that I want to show you. This is because some we may say, well, things are going great. And there may be issues, but actually the preaching is going very well. So if I have a four-legged table, and I'm sure we're short on four-legged tables here. If I have a four-legged table and I start sawing one of the legs, everything looks great. Until I've actually sawed through that leg. So what this shows is this curve. And here you're seeing the curve, say, of the first generation or a generation. Ultimately, there are many curves like this according to each generation. And the key to spreading Krishna consciousness, Srila Prabhupada came, and here he left the world. And that was a crisis. And then came the next generation. Now, things can go one of two ways. Either they go up, they don't go down. Things don't stay in one place in the material world. You throw a ball up, it goes up for a while, then it comes down. So here, this was actually a crisis when Srila Prabhupada left. Will successive generations continue to make this curve, as you can see here, go up? You have to be very, very clear. Before things start to go down, something or things happen, which here we call crisis. The problem is that while I'm sawing away the leg of the table, you're not noticing anything. Everything seems very stable. Everything's okay. Everything's just as before, but it's not okay. Actually, the crisis started when? When the table falls, or when I started sawing? Yeah, the sawing is already the crisis. So the crisis started here, but you don't see it. As it starts to go down, you don't see it. You only start to see it when the symptoms start to become evident. And that's not the crisis anymore. The crisis isn't that the leg's fallen out. The crisis was that someone was sawing and you didn't notice. So this then becomes, and you know, this delta here is time. As time goes on, things start to become evident. So how do you ensure that you continue to go up and that a mission doesn't actually go down or die in time? You have to have innovation. Otherwise you get decline. Now innovation doesn't mean mental speculation, it doesn't mean creating new things. It means you have to innovate, you have to compensate for the missing elements that, depending on how many generations are gone, that are there. So that means there has to be reflection, self-reflection. You have to have vision, you have to be proactive, and you have to implement. And if you don't do that, and you think, well, it's all right, we're going down, something will happen. Something will definitely happen. You'll keep going down. And when someone cuts out the second leg of the table, then it becomes an even worse situation. So decline means you're complacent, there's fragmentation, you lose the context, you just sort of react to the situation, and ultimately it dissolves. Sakali nehamata yoga nasta parantapa. So I'm bringing this up because when we talk about distributing books, we have a purpose. Prabhupada had an intent. He had a content. He had a context in which he wanted to actually achieve this book distribution. He gave us many instructions in that regard. But it needs to be actually accompanied by a realistic perspective of the challenges that actually face us as subsequent generations of the Krishna consciousness movement come into place. And as I mentioned, what was the solution to fill those missing gaps? Someone remembers previously was? Education, yeah. Education, staying in touch with Srila Prabhupada's instructions, books, in a very systematic way. Okay, before we go through this, now I'm going to ask. Vishwamba, just stand up over here. You're going to just do a quick count. How many devotees here have read Bhagavad Gita more than 3 times? Okay, gentlemen, you certainly outnumber the ladies. But I'd say that's a good 20-30%. How many devotees have read all of the Srimad Bhagavatam at least once? Good. How many devotees have read Chaitanya Charitamrita? Still good. And Nectar of Devotion. All right. I think English devotees are better than the international average. We did a survey last year. Okay, now you can sit down. But leave a donation before you go. last year there was an international leadership survey. There was international leadership sangha in Sridhar Mayapur. There were 750 leaders that came from all over the world. And we did a survey, which was a little better than this. It wasn't just hands, but it was a fill-out survey, of which, unfortunately, only a third of the devotees filled it out. But it was to know what the average reading, studying, education. And of course, reading Prabhupada's books and studying them are two different things, especially when you study them in the context of Prabhupada's desires, intentions, the mission, and so on. These were all 20-year-old devotees, so they're not the leaders. So it was very representative. This was the information. All the devotees had read the Bhagavad Gita at least 4 times. Not bad. I mean, it's not bad. Who's read the Bhagavad Gita 10 times here? We've got a couple of devotees. Very good. 2 devotees. 130 of the 250 devotees, about 50%, read it only 1 or 2 times in their whole life, which is really not very good. They're not so connected. With Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, they read twice. Second canto, we can see going down, and as the other cantos go on, it also continued to go down. Here you can see the third, reading the third through the 12th canto was only once. So it was similar to here. More or less, we see that a third of the devotees read Srimad Bhagavatam one time. Excuse me, all the devotees read Srimad Bhagavatam one time, or at least that was the average that it came out. Chaitanya Charitamrita was already lower. Nectar of Devotion, quite good, probably because it's a shorter book. So this is actually, now I need someone here with a microphone, another microphone, or you can just speak loud. Who speaks good English? Who knows English? I know, Chaitanya, you're at a good distance, you speak loud, okay? And So here the point was, are our devotees really connected with Srila Prabhupada through reading and studying Srila Prabhupada's books? Do we educate devotees sufficiently in Srila Prabhupada's books, Bhaktivedanta Manor? We have a very good program for that. And by comparison to the way we used to do it, you know, when I moved in the temple and I sat down after on the first day to read Prabhupada's books, and someone told me, "No, Prabhu, that's Maya. We don't do that here. You gotta go out and sell books." What happened? Oops, I pressed something. Okay. So the whole purpose was, is that if we're really going to actually save the mission and fulfill the purpose of our book distribution, our devotees really need to be close to Srila Prabhupada to understand the context, the instruction, his instructions, and to be able to deal with the challenges that come in spreading the Krishna consciousness movement. Ready? Okay, so Srila Prabhupada said,
GBC member means they will see that in every temple these books are very thoroughly being read and discussed and understood and applied in practical life.
Strong words, or very clear words. Read, discussed, understood, applied.
Your first job should be to make sure that every one of the devotees in your zone of management is reading regularly our literatures and discussing the subject matter seriously through different angles of seeing. What good are many, many devotees if none of them are knowledgeable?
What's the good? Now, yesterday, I was in South London. I didn't get the type of response I got here when I asked how many people read Srimad Bhagavatam or Chaitanya. No one, two people read Chaitanya Charitamrita out of 100. Prabhupada says, what's the good? What's the good? So people really need to know what they're doing, and if they're going to carry the load, what's the use of a load bearer if he's a weakling, if he can't even walk? How's he going to carry a weight?
If you want to stay in Krishna consciousness, you have to develop firm faith in Guru instruction. Therefore, you must study my books very scrutinizingly, follow the four regulative principles very strictly, and chant 16 rounds daily, avoiding the 10 offenses. Don't take this movement as something cheap.
Scrutinizingly studying Srila Prabhupada's book. Because when we're asking everyone, all right, put up your hands, but who's really studying? Well, there's a different thing. You're all educated, so you know what studying means, and you all know what reading a book means. So reading and studying are two different things. Ongoing, systematic, that we apply our time and energy.
All study very scrutinizingly all of the books, so that when the need arises, you can repeat in your own words their purport. I want that we shall concentrate on making our devotees Krishna conscious and ourselves becoming Krishna conscious, and not be so much concerned with expanding ourselves widely, but without any spiritual content. Just like boiling the milk, it becomes thicker and sweeter. Now do like that. Boil
the milk. Prabhupada wasn't interested in vast, vast spreading of Krishna consciousness if it meant no quality. Prabhupada wanted quality and quantity. But if you have to sacrifice one, then sacrifice the quantity. Don't think that we're successful just because you have a world full of neophyte devotees or even less than that. But rather Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing that no, we need, and especially our preachers, initiated devotees, it means that you are very knowledgeable. Because in Vedic times, especially the men, you would have taken 20 years of Shastric study. Now someone goes off to, I don't know, VIHE for 6 months. Well, it would be 20 years. And not 6 months in your 20s or 30s or 40s when the head is full of so many things, but from age 5 to 25. So that we really have a very clear idea of what it's about. that the idea was so clear that they didn't have to write it down. That it wasn't just a matter of memorizing. They understood. They understood the context. They understood the purport so much so that they wouldn't even deviate with a letter or with an accent on a word. Everything was perfectly repeated. So, obviously, we're not going to be doing that, but Prabhupada wants us to boil the milk. So, keep this in mind, because when we're talking about book distribution, it's buddhi yoga jahati, huh? It means intelligence. We want to use intelligence. And intelligence means we have to actually see how kalineha mahata, how the material energy is working, what are the challenges facing Krishna consciousness. And so here we are, all right, 50 years practically after the Krishna consciousness movement is established. That's almost three chronological generations are gone, but probably there's four generations here now, if not five. So what is the purpose? Where are we going with distributing our literature? Are we achieving our goals? I'm not commenting on any of those things. I just thought it would be useful to have this as an instrument for devotees to think about and to connect with that key element of which Srila Prabhupada is emphasizing. Prabhupada did not get up at midnight, 1 o'clock in the morning, just for entertainment. He got up to write books. And that was what he concentrated his time on. He got up to write books. He spoke from his books. He gave lectures from his books. He told us to distribute books. He emphasized the books. Because ultimately the success of continuing on the Krishna consciousness movement is going to be in our really understanding the intention, the context, the instructions, all the different topics that arise that are in Srila Prabhupada's books, in Prabhupada's other instructions, and we know how to balance these off. That really takes wisdom and intelligence. So I thought I would just leave you with that, and since we're doing good time-wise, then I'll just go to my other second point, which I wanted to, and then maybe if we have a few minutes for questions. Prabhupada Charan was the person who really sort of pioneered a new type of... Where is he? He was here. Is he still here? I don't know. Oh, he went outside. Anyway, he pioneered a new type of book distribution, and a new type of preaching, which, in one sense, it's very obvious, it's very logical. What was it? Well, that the people that you meet, you keep contact with them. You don't just let them go. So you're in a parking lot, you're on the street, you're at a light, you're at a somewhere, and you stop a person, you sell them a book, they go, end of story. But he started this thing of, well, actually get their contacts, get their names, start to visit them, cultivate them on a regular basis, something novel, preaching to people, and actually elevating their consciousness and maintaining that connection in which you invest an extraordinary amount of time in making that first contact and a lot of energy. But then all of these people and devotees come back so enthusiastic. I met such fantastic persons today. Where is he? I don't know. You got his telephone number? I don't know. You get his email number? No. So they're great people. But then if they're so great people, why do we let them go? Other devotees, Atokshita Krishna, inherited that service. And we tried, actually, here at the Manor in UK, we tried. Of course, devotees have been doing that, actually, with the Indian community for many years. And, of course, there's an edge to doing that, especially when they're doing that door-to-door. We called it Contact Sankirtan back in the 80s. And devotees were trying. It didn't really quite succeed. They sort of made it work. But basically it means that the people that you connect with, you get their information and you cultivate them. Now, these two gentlemen, they actually do by going to businesses, shops, factories, and so on. In other words, they're going to stationary places. I just want to give an example. We have one devotee. He's been here. If you look down, you've seen him because he's very small. He's about that big. His name's, well, he's a little bigger, Mohan. And he's extremely expert at doing the same thing, but he's not going door to door. He just does it from the street. He meets people. He's based in Budapest. What did he say? 15 years? 12 years he's been. Yeah, he's been doing Sankirtan for 13, 14. He moved in the temple when he was 17. When I first saw him, I thought he was like some runaway kid from home. He had to prove to me how old he was before it let him in. But his mother's very favorable. She chants also, and he engages her. So his expertise is that he goes on the street and he meets people. Now, he meets everybody. He meets ministers of parliament, he meets billionaires, he meets other people, and he keeps contact with them. He cultivates them year upon year upon year. And he has a system of cultivation where he engages other people in email contact. He invites them to the restaurant, to the temple, takes them down to the farm. Nothing, nothing, nothing in terms of result. Obviously, there's a result because they're becoming Krishna conscious. So this idea of not letting those good people, that really great person, go, but cultivate him, it's a different type of preaching, because it doesn't take much to stop a person, give him a line, and move on. But to actually then cultivate them over the long term, to preach to them that you sit, well, I met this really wealthy person and he was really favorable, okay, and now you're sitting with him at a table for 2 hours, you're going to be able to engage him and encourage him and bring him forward and have the intention that we want this person to be a devotee. And in being a devotee, we know that part of the things that's going to happen is that they're going to buy books, they're going to give donations, and they're going to help spread the Krishna consciousness movement. Who knows, they may end up giving their lives. So it's very interesting. Mohan makes devotees, you know, full-time devotees who move in. He cultivates them. He cultivates donors, people who become regular donors, and then he has it set up. Same thing as what they're doing in Scotland, what they are doing in Scotland. Once or twice a year, he's got all these people, he phones them up, or sometimes they just come to him. And they then buy books, or they've got all the books, or they give very substantial donations. Even this year, his biggest donation happened to be from a company my niece manages, but that's just a detail. He's the one who made the contact, it didn't come through me. So she's my niece. But she wasn't giving the money to me, she was giving the money to him. Because he met her on the street. And then she connected him with her boss. And so they gave 2 million, which is about, say, 5,000 or 6,000 pounds. And did the same last year, and the same the year before. And then he gets, that was his largest donation, and then he gets regular donations like that. And these people move along. Now you've got a couple of devotees doing that in the UK. If you had everyone who's sitting here, all the book distributors actually, and this is something that, I know Kripa Moy is out there, but he's been banging his head against the wall for the last 30 years about this, is don't lose the contact that you make, that good person, whether he's good as a potential brahmachari, brahmacharini, whether he's good as a potential donor, whether he's someone who's got influence and can help us with who knows what, with the Haveli, take the name and cultivate them. But it requires coming to a different level of maturity in terms of devotees. It requires a different level of maturity in terms of preaching, because it's a different thing when this person's spiritual life is on your shoulders. It's not just a quickie on the street selling a book, which is not an easy thing because you have to convince them, but it's It's more, and it requires development on part of the devotees, that the devotees really learn how to actually preach and how to take responsibility for people's lives and to make them Krishna conscious. So I'll just give you one example, and of course then there's the whole magic of book distribution, which could have been in another class, but this also has a certain type of magic. There's a magic that comes along with this. I'll just explain. I'll just give one story, which he told me, and then he told on the Sankirtan festival also. And this was, I don't remember which day of the marathon. Our marathon was 34 days long in Hungary. And that was the competition marathon. And the farm goes out a little earlier because they're farmers. So they're like sort of at a, they're not used to Sankirtan, so they go out 2 weeks earlier just to sort of get into the, they have a pre-marathon marathon just to sort of get going. And so that was 34 days, and somewhere towards the end of the marathon, so he has one person who takes him out with a car, and he's got a book, well, he doesn't have a book bag. He's got a trunk, you know, the stainless steel trunks. So he's got a stainless steel trunk that's from here to there, it's this big, and it's full of books, so it takes two people to carry, and that's what he carries, and then he takes that with him, so someone to drive him, and he has one or two people who actually do telephoning for him, or sending emails. So he went to one shopping center, and this was sort of already later in the day, because to contact these people, make the connection, it again takes time. And so you're not necessarily just running out at 9 a.m. in the morning on the marathon. So he went out later, and he was there, and he was sitting inside the mall. So from inside the mall, he was sort of managing his other people who were helping him. And they do it, obviously, part-time during the marathon. It's full-time. So he said, okay, listen, send off a message to such and such person because he hasn't given as yet. And as he was telling that to, we'll call him his secretary, so he's sitting there in the mall, and all of a sudden that person is walking towards him and comes up to him, and then, only have 5 minutes, so I'll sort of summarize. That person comes up, and he says, I've just been waiting for you to get in touch with me. He says, last year I gave this much, so this year I think I should increase it, and here it is. Okay, so he gave that. So he was there, and then, so this went on. He did this, I think, 6 or 7 times, and he was just sitting there in the mall, and all of these people were coming, one after another. One of the persons, he phoned the person, okay, I don't know what's going on, but there's this other person, and she wanted me to go to the other side of the city to see her, but I don't have time for that, and she only usually gives about, say, £100, so I'm not going to drive to the other side of the city for £100. But as he's saying that, she comes walking, hang on a minute, she's just coming, she's just walking over there, and she comes over, you know, I feel so bad, I only give you £100 every year, and I think that I should really do something a little better this year, so gave a different book. And then he's got these huge big Ramayana books and other Darshan books that he carries with him. That's why he has to have that big box, because it's not just Prabhupada's books. Some of these people have got everything. So they get all these, you know, beautiful coffee table books and so on as well. So this just went on, and he just sat there, and in the time that he sat there on that day, I think he did like, I don't know, 600,000-700,000 forint, which is about, say £2,000. So, and he didn't get to move. In fact, they didn't even get to send an email. But Krishna was just sending them one after another. So, of course, these things happen. Everyone has their stories. You're going to share those wonderful stories that are there. But there are other realms of book distribution that devotees can think about and to enter if we're really going to make a difference. And if we go to issues, one issue you can say is, are we making a difference in the world? I mean, obviously we're making a difference, but are we making a difference that's making a difference? In other words, is it actually changing the direction of society? I don't know about the society that you live in, but the one that I live in is not the devotee society, but this outside society is going to hell at breakneck speed. So are we going to stay out more hours? I doubt it. Are you going to be carrying more books on your back? Probably not. What can we do to actually increase what we're doing? And for that, we need to be creative, we need to be intelligent, we need to see how we can fulfill Srila Prabhupada's mission, what was Prabhupada's intent. And if you read Prabhupada's statements on book distribution, Prabhupada's, on the majority of time, is talking door-to-door, door-to-door, door-to-door. He said, go door-to-door. Although we're on the street, Prabhupada's saying, yes, you go door-to-door. Of course, Prabhupada appreciated all book distribution, but he placed this also emphasis at the end. End meaning in 1977, Prabhupada was very much emphasizing sell sets of books, just like the encyclopedia salesman learn how to sell sets of books. It was an instruction. Prabhupada, so long ago, how much do we succeed in actually selling real sets of Srila Prabhupada's books? So I'm just going to conclude there. Here's something to think about. There's a wonderful field out there. The fact that everyone is going to hell means that there's a lot to do. There's a wonderful field out there. People are open. They're ready to hear alternatives. And somehow or another, we need to think about how are we going to realize Srila Prabhupada's mission, keep it alive, and get that curve going up. Don't succumb to the pitfalls that may actually bring us down. And for that, we have to know what did Srila Prabhupada want of this Krishna consciousness movement and of each and every one of us. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Transcendental Book Distribution ki jai. Jai Nitai Gaur Premanandi, Shishivara Gokulananda ki jai.